Welcome, everyone, to the Abundance Formula Podcast. My name is Gina Oldham, practitioner of prosthetics and orthotics, fitness expert, business owner, lifestyle entrepreneur, and four-time national bikini competitor. This podcast was created to empower people to build abundant lives for themselves, lives that are purposeful, fruitful, and send a ripple effect through the world. From short motivational segments to game-changing conversations with highly successful and abundant people, be ready to learn the formula of common actions, thought patterns, and principles that create abundant living. Whether it be your mindset, health, business, or relationships, the Abundance Formula has what you need to uplevel your life to the one you're called to live. So here we go. Hello, everybody. Thanks so much for choosing to listen to the show today. Before we dive into today's episode, I want to make sure and introduce you all to one of the key sponsors of the Abundance Formula event. And it's actually headed up by our girl, Whitney Weiser Savage, who you all know and love. She's been on the podcast a couple different times. And so her company, Her Style, which is the women's division of MindStyle for all things related to women empowerment. MindStyle is short for mindset, lifestyle, and it's an event-based lifestyle brand and personal development company that incorporates mindset elements into all of their events. So they emphasize a life in balance and specialize in creating moments that transcend an individual's experience in order to change their mindset. So you can truly change your life by changing your mindset, which we all know, and this happens to also be their mantra. So Her Style initiative is to uplift and connect women worldwide by promoting positivity, self-love, leadership, and personal development. They have an upcoming event, which is in Belize, and I'm so excited because I'm actually going to be a speaker and coach there in Belize for this event, so I hope to see you all there. It's from January 23 to 28, and this retreat is titled Building Influence in Belize, and it will focus on the importance of knowing yourself, defining your identity, and bringing your personal brand into alignment with the vision you have for your life. So Her Style is so amazing. Make sure you follow them on Instagram at Her Style. And make sure you're following Whitney Weiser Savage as well, because again, she's the host of this, so she'll be posting about it not only on her personal page, and you can get to know her better there, but then you can also go to the actual Her Style Instagram handle to know specifically just about all of the events that they've done in the past and what they're doing in the future and getting ready for Belize. So make sure you check them out, check her out. And again, I would love to see you all there because I'm going to be there teaching and speaking. There's going to be so many fun activities that we're going to do. It's at a beautiful resort. It's going to be so awesome. So I hope to see you guys there. And again, this totally aligns with everything the Abundance Formula, which is why they are one of our key sponsors for the Abundance Formula event. So make sure to grab your Abundance Formula event ticket. It's happening November 5, 2022. It goes from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Make sure you get that ticket, you guys. There's limited seating available, so don't miss it. You can get your ticket at www.oldhamstrong.com/the Abundance Formula event. And again, make sure to check out Her Style as one of our key sponsors of the event. All right, so today's guest is extra special. It is RJ Savage. He's an IFBB pro bodybuilder in classic physique division of bodybuilding, and he is married to none other than our girl, Whitney Weiser Savage. You guys know Whitney, been on the podcast a couple times now, so this is her husband. So you guys know how epic Whitney is, so just imagine what kind of person she would marry, right? So of course she's married to an IFBB pro as well, and he's a successful entrepreneur, has his own personal training business, and is a speaker, a motivational speaker, teacher. This wasn't always how it was, you guys, and so this interview is extra special because he really shares, and he's just recently started sharing the story of his life, and it's wild, and I'm so grateful that he's sharing it because it is one of, you know, he gets in a lot of trouble in his younger days and in trouble with the law, like in to serious levels, but I won't spoil any of that. I'll let him talk to you guys about it, but really gets in trouble with the law and just in every way you can imagine, struggled with addictions, everything. And he really just lays it all out there for you guys. He doesn't really hold anything back. So he just really shares the mess, right, of his life. But then you guys get to see how it's transformed into his message, which is such a cool thing. Not many people are willing to share truly all the raw dirty, yucky details of their past. We don't often want people to know that stuff because it's, we don't want it to like change the perspective of us today and whatever. But he really has showed, instead of thinking of it in that way, I mean, he's living a successful life now. So, I mean, after you hear from where he came from to where he is now, it just gives so much hope for so many people to be like, gosh, you know, this could be you, but you can be different and there can be so much waiting for you. You can be the same person and have two completely different futures in front of you. And then when you really get down to your choices and your responsibility and taking action steps and being intentional and these things, man, what you can create. So I really love this episode because he does tell you how dirty and dark it was. And he shares all of that. And many of us won't have had this crazy of a past, right? So then golly, like if he can do it, you can do it. But if you are in a place like where he was, there is hope for you. And so I love that. And we really dig into this episode on so many things, mental health, which has always been the most popular of any of the episodes I've done, which tells me that so many people struggle with mental health, need mental health support, you know, whether that's anxiety, depression, worth issues, addictions, you know, whatever it may be. So many people are struggling in this area and so many people need help and think that they're alone. They think, well, okay, well, that person may share a little bit of their mental situation, but it's nowhere near as bad as mine. So their breakthrough couldn't be mine, right? But we talk about that with him and the voices in his head and the process, him quitting his addictions, but then going right back to it. And, you know, that whole dance, we go into all of that, you guys. So it's a really excellent episode. I hope you enjoy it. If you do, make sure you send us a message. Most importantly, share it in your stories if you really think it could help people, you know, help spread the message of his story, you guys, because so many people are in these places and we have no idea and they need us. So your share of his story, him sharing his story, could be the one thing somebody needed. So I hope you guys enjoy it. And let's dive in. All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Abundance Formula Podcast. I'm so excited to have RJ Savage on today. He is married to, as you guys know, Whitney Weiser, but now she's Whitney Weiser Savage. So she's been on a couple different times. So everybody knows exactly who she is. So this is who has gotten to marry Whitney. So I'm so excited for y'all to hear the amazing man that she has found and who he is. So go ahead and start out by telling everybody who you are and your backstory and where you're at today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. So yeah, again, I'm RJ Savage, Whitney's husband, and a little bit of backstory on me. I'm a professional bodybuilder and I run my own personal training business as well. And now I'm actually getting into speaking because of my story that I have that needs to be out there so it can help some anybody, but mostly, you know, I'm trying to target the younger audience, the younger kids, so they don't have to go through what I went through. But yeah, let's just go ahead and start. So, I mean, growing up, I was born in Bloomington, Indiana, and we immediately moved to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and raised, you know, by both my parents, you know, raised me good, grew up playing sports. And fast forward to about 10 years old, we decided to move to Nashville because of my dad's job. We moved to Nashville. I was 10, and it was probably around 12 years old where I started to, I guess, experiment, you know, with just little things like, you know, alcohol, you know, even smoking cigarettes and stuff like that. And just being a boy, like, you know, out, you know, doing things I shouldn't be doing. But so it kind of just, you know, started around like the crowd of the kids that I was hanging out with. And being boys, you know, we're going to get in trouble and do stuff and not listen. So I did that a little bit, but I was a good kid, you know, just a boy out in the neighborhood running around doing the little dumb stuff. But, you know, as I got older and we ended up moving from Donelson to Mount Juliet the beginning of my freshman year of high school because of the school, mostly the school district. Where I would have went to high school was pretty rough, that high school. So my parents definitely didn't want me going there. My sister, I have an older sister and older brother, and me and her a day a year apart. She went to this school, which was McGavick High School. And She was a good kid. She was, you know, a good student too. So she didn't get in trouble, but that school was pretty rough. So they definitely didn't want me to go there because I was already kind of dabbling and getting in trouble here and there. So we moved to Mount Juliet. And for me, you know, that was like the worst because I didn't know anything about Mount Juliet. And it was like, I thought it was a little small country town, like didn't want to be there. But I quickly found, you know, I guess my group, because back in the day, like I thought I was, you know, a thug, I guess you would call it. So I found, you know, I found the group of people that that at the time, you know, that I felt comfortable being around. And I just was living for me. And we were, you know, got into smoking pot and got into doing drugs. And I quit playing sports as soon as I got my license. And that's where it really just took a turn for like the worst. I was just out in the streets, you know, doing things I shouldn't be doing. And, you know, my parents didn't have a clue. Well, I say they didn't have a clue. My dad, you know, they knew. And so the first big wake up call for me was at 18 years old. I OD'd on cocaine and died. Thankfully, you know, God had bigger plans for me, or I wouldn't even be here today from that. But yeah, I OD'd and died in the house that I was at where this happened. You know, they tried CPR and everything for me to try to bring me back. And then my buddy at the time that was there, something told him to throw me in the bathtub, and then they turned on the cold shower, and it ended up shocking my heart. Meantime, the ambulance was already on the way there to get me. And so thankfully that he did that. And next thing I know, I just wake up in the hospital. And so that was scary because I didn't realize what was going on. And when I woke up in the hospital, there was an officer in there, and, you know, he pretty much told me what had happened and that, you know, I was lucky I was just turned 18. Otherwise, I was going to go to jail. And then I had to call my parents and let them know where I was at and to come get me and why I was there. So that was really tough because I felt like a huge letdown. Because again, like I said, I was raised right, but I went my own way. And I grew up, you know, in church, and my mother and my grandmother, you know, taught me about God at a young age and was always praying for me. But I was young, so I wasn't ready for that yet. And I was just kind of letting it go in one ear and out the other. So after that, that was a big wake-up call, you know, 18 years old, dying and getting another chance. So I changed some things around and had a good support system, obviously, my family, and, you know, just try to, I guess, start doing better. But, you know, I'll do good for a little bit, and then I'll, you know, end up back, you know, in the wrong crowd again and getting in a little trouble here and, you know, getting arrested for simple possession and dumb things like that. And got back into the drugs, and then got to where I was working for my dad. So then I couldn't do drugs because if I, you know, had a drug test that I had to take, then, you know, I couldn't make him look bad because he was, you know, he was pretty high up boss at this company he was working for. So kind of a straightened path for a little while. And then I was 20 years old. We always went on family vacations, and me and my sister, we always got to bring a friend with us. And so I brought a buddy of mine at the time, and you know, we drove his car, my sister and them drove their car, and we went down there and was having a good time. And then we met somebody down there. And like I said, we started, you know, back into doing drugs. So, you know, we were smoking and taking pills and drinking and just, you know, living for ourselves again. And my buddy ran out of money, and we decided to have this, you know, bright idea that we would rob some people to get some money. And I was never a violent person. I never did things like that. Never wanted to hurt people. Never carried a gun. I did stupid things and I stolen things, but I was never, you know, a violent person to try and hurt someone or do that. But, you know, we were super intoxicated on drugs and just didn't care about anything or anybody. And so that's what we did. We went out on the beach and we found these two dudes that looked like they was probably around our age. And we robbed them. We pulled a gun on them. And, you know, I told them, you know, I was involved and told them to give them their stuff. And just right then and there, I immediately had remorse looking in their eyes and seeing this, you know, how scared they were. I mean, it was a loaded gun pointed right in their face. And so we robbed them and we took off running and left and got in the car. And, you know, pretty much, you know, it was like kind of understood, like, you know, that was it. Like, we weren't doing that again. You know, the cops, you know, obviously going to be called. Like, they were going to be looking. You know, obviously they know what vehicle we were in because we were on foot. But, you know, it was going to be hot. So that was it. And that wasn't it. We ended up, you know, driving around and went to a pier parking lot, and there was another car in the parking lot. And, you know, next thing I know, I look up and he's robbing the car next to us. And, I look over and they're looking at me, and I'm, you know, yelling like for them not to look at me because I don't want them to see me and get a description of me. And so after that, you know, we got in the car, or he got in the car, and we left, and we get back to the room, and me and him had some words and whatnot. And then him and the guy just went off, and I went upstairs and ended up going to sleep with my sister and her friend. And next thing I know, I'm getting woke up and I'm getting arrested and guns on me, and I'm getting charged with 3 counts of armed robbery. And I was still super intoxicated, so like I really didn't care and really didn't even know what was going on, and I was just, you know, acted like I didn't know what was going on. And then it was, you know, kind of hitting me a little bit, because then I realized, okay, like, you know, they brought me out, put a spotlight on me, identified me because witnesses were there. Then they got my parents and you know, arrested and took me to jail. And I woke up, you know, and was sobered up and realized, like, man, what have I just gotten myself into? This is not good. This is really, really bad. And so it cost my family a lot of money to get me out. My parents, you know, they weren't rich by any means. My dad took a lot of his 401k money, and they put our house up, and I had to take out loans, you know, just to make bond, just to get me out, because that was some serious charges that carried, you know, 10 to 20 years just for those charges. So the bond was really high. And thankfully, you know, my parents, you know, just did what they had to do because they loved their son, and they never gave up on me. They never, ever gave up on me. And I'm so thankful for that. So I got bonded out and got to come home while I waited to go to court. And I didn't go to court for a whole year. So, you know, I'm just depressed and, you know, thinking I'm going away for a long time. You know, we didn't have any, you know, word on, you know, it looking good at all. Like, it was really bad. So I was just kind of preparing, you know, for that. And just scared, just living in fear, really. But was trying to really, you know, lean into God at that time. And my grandma gave me a scripture to read and sleep with under my pillow that she'd anointed. And I just, you know, kept reading and praying and praying. And then it came time, you know, to have to go to court. And we went down to Florida and we stayed in a condo. And, you know, once I got there, I was going to have to go to court and turn myself in. And once I was there, then they had me. So that morning, like, you know, we still didn't know what was going to happen. You know, no plea deal or anything like that had been made or anything at all. And so I was scared. So honestly, like that morning when I woke up, I just told my family, I was like, look, like, I can't do this. I can't, like, I'm going to run. Like, there's no way I can go to prison, you know, for 10, 15 years. And my grandmother, she's like my angel. She just put her hand on my shoulder and she just told me, she said, son, she's like, look, I talked to God this morning. She's like, you're coming home today. And immediately it was just like lifted off of me. Like, I just knew, I believed, and I had all the faith that's exactly what was going to happen. And so we got in the car and we went to court and I turned myself in. And once I did that, they had me. I was back there in a holding cell. Like, if they were going to keep me, then I was stuck. But I just sat in that holding cell, just praying. And I just repeatedly just kept saying, thank you, Jesus, I'm coming home today. And went out to the courtroom. And I don't even really remember what all was being said. I just kept saying that under my breath. And I was just looking out at my family. And obviously, like, you know, they're in tears and scared and what's going to come. And next thing I know, I hear a little argument going on, you know, with the DA and about, I guess, what they were trying to get my sentence, you know, to probation or whatnot, because I wasn't the one with the gun. And so they were trying to work a deal, and it didn't sound like it was going good, but I still wasn't really paying attention. Next thing I know, the judge, you know, hits his thing, and I just remember seeing, like, I guess it would be tears of joy, like, on my family, but, like, I still didn't know. And they just, you know, like, they're kind of quick with this stuff, so because they got other people. So it was like, all right. And they just took me to the back, and then my lawyer comes back there, and And he's like, hey, man, he's like, we did it, whatever. And you know, I got, he's like, you know, you're getting another chance, man. He was like, you know, this is it for you, man. He's like, you really, you know, really need to turn your life around. And so that, like that day, just, it felt like I'd been, you know, locked up already for a long time. And so I just felt free. And that was like, for me, just, I had to change, you know, the way I was living. Like there was no, I had to, like, that was it. I wasn't going to get another chance. That was it. God has spared me. And so when I finally got to come back home, you know, I was on very strict supervised probation and a suspended sentence of 10 years. So if I violated, I was going to go to prison for 10 years. And so I changed my whole circle of friends when I came back. And not to say that anybody was bad. It's just, you know, the crowd that I was hanging with, you know, we weren't doing the things that we should have been doing. So, and I made my own decisions and, you know, got myself into everything that I did. You know, nobody forced me to do anything. You know, I just, I made my own decisions and had to pay for everything that I did. And so I ended up getting into the gym because of some buddies that I grew up with playing sports. You know, they were living right. And at this time, everybody had already heard about what happened in a small town. So they were like, well, why don't you come work out? And I was like, okay. And so I did. And that was pretty much like my high. That became like an addiction, like pretty quick, because my body, I was just a skinny kid. I was, you know, 160 pounds, like just skinny little scrawny kid, you know, athletic. But as soon as I started, you know, hitting the weights, my body responded pretty quick. And so that became my new high. That became, you know, the bar, you know, the drugs for me was that. And I actually did, you know, let it consume me at the beginning to where, you know, I was neglecting a lot of things. And then I, you know, shortly right after that is when I found out about I had a daughter. And so, and she, you know, she's 17 today. So it was, you know, I was 20 years old. I was young and I didn't know how to be a dad. You know, I was still, you know, growing up myself. I just went through all that. So I wasn't the greatest dad. You know, I got to see her, you know, I had her every week, once a week and every other weekend. But I just didn't have the patience. I didn't know what to do. And so I was really thankful that I had like my mom and my sister to help, you know, and, you know, in relationships that I was into or whatnot. And that was really tough on me because I, you know, I wanted to be a good father and I just didn't know like how, and I didn't have the patience to sit, you know, and I had a girl. So mm-hmm. like, it was just really, really tough for me. And so, you know, I did the best that I could. And I finally found balance with the gym. Cause like I said, it consumed me to where I didn't care about anything but the gym. You know, that was all I cared about. And I finally found some balance with that. And as I kept competing, or I just actually started competing, some of my buddies was like, hey man, you need to compete. And I was like, what? Like, I'm not competing in bodybuilding. I'm not wearing a Speedo. Like, that's all I was thinking about. Like, I'm not wearing a Speedo. No. And then sure enough, you know, they talked me into it and I decided, all right, well, I'm going to do a show. And so I did my first show in 2011. I did the Tennessee State show and I actually won my class. And that was pretty much like the deal, you know, that right there, just fueled me that much more to like really pursue bodybuilding. And so meantime, you know, I'm working, you know, I worked for my dad laying asphalt for years. And then I got out of that and got in the union as a pipe fitter for a while. And, you know, I did some telecommunication work. So I've done a few things, but I was never happy with that. And, you know, laying asphalt's hard, hot work. And, you know, that's all I pretty much knew because of my dad anyway. So I knew I definitely didn't want to be doing that the rest of my life, but I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I had no clue. And so I just was working and just kept competing. And then it was around, I guess it was 2016 when, you know, I decided to start my own personal training business. And because, you know, growing up in Donelson and through Hermitage and Mount Juliet area and the cities around where I grew up, I knew a lot of people and I've been training for a while and they, you know, these people had seen me, you know, change and turn my life around. So when I started my business, I would not recommend anybody doing it the way I did it. But my faith grew so much in over the years, you know, with God and, you know, him, you know, having a plan for my life and, you know, just always trusting him. So I was in the middle of the airport, the Nashville airport, laying asphalt one day and literally called my dad and was like, hey, I'm done laying asphalt. I'm going to tell the foreman, like, this is it. I'm gonna go home and get my certification and I'm gonna start my own business. And he was happy. You know, he definitely didn't want me doing that. So I told the foreman and I left right then. And I went home. And Facebook was out, but that was it. So I took my certification, passed it, and made a post, you know, on Facebook about doing it. And I mean, I didn't miss a beat. I was training clients literally the next day, and I haven't looked back since, you know, and that's been, I guess, 6, almost 7 years now. So I'm, you know, been very, you know, fortunate with that. So, you know, the business has been great. And then, you know, through that, I still, you know, kept competing. And the goal of mine the whole time through competing, you know, when I realized that I could do good at it, was to turn pro. And there was many times that, you know, I for sure thought I was going to happen. It was going to happen this time. It was going to happen this time, but it didn't. But I never gave up, because I just knew, you know, that eventually my time would come, and then it was all God's time and not mine. But that's what kept me grounded in the discipline that I got from bodybuilding. That's what carried me through, you know, everything else and poured out into everything else in my life. And so I'm very thankful for that, you know. And, you know, I mean, just everything that, you know, you go through, there's always something to learn through it if you choose to do that and learn, you know, through your mistakes and trying to find the good in them. So unfortunately, I had to go through a lot of that. But it's made me the man I am today. And, you know, I don't have any regrets. I wouldn't be where I'm at today had I not went through those things. So, you know, I give all the glories to God for everything, you know, for me being here still alive and healthy and being where I'm at. But, that's pretty much what happened with that. And, I just kept competing, and then 2020 came around, and 2020 is actually when I turned pro. Believe it or not, through everything and COVID whatnot, I just never gave up, and they kept canceling shows and pushing them back. Finally decided to have some, and I ended up making it happen. I turned pro, and this has been 10 years, you know, in the making, you know, working at it, and 8 weeks later I tear my pec. Yeah. Right? Like, you know, it's just it's a constant battle, you know, of just like never giving up. And you know, for me, like never giving up was, I mean, giving up was never an option, no matter what, no matter, you know, what life threw at me, relationships, like anything, like I would just never give up. And I was actually, you know, in a relationship and engaged before, met my wife, Whitney, that I'm married to. Just God works in mysterious ways. You know, I thought I was going to be spending my life with this other person, and this other person, you know, decided that, you know, that they, you know, wanted someone else. And so that happened, you know, at the beginning of 2021. And me and Whitney had always supported each other respectfully through social media, and you know, we knew of each other for some years or whatnot. And something, you know, I was just driving down the road one day, and something, God just told me to just call Whitney. So I literally did. I called her, and you know, she obviously had this, you know, tone of like, you shouldn't be calling me, right? You know. I definitely let her know, like, it was okay. And, you know, I was like, hey, I'm single. Like, it's okay. And, you know, she was like, what? You know, and I explained everything to her and whatnot. And then we just ended up, you know, just hanging out as friends. And just, you know, we obviously knew, you know, we had, you know, I just went through that. So, you know, I was definitely not looking for anything. And she obviously knew what I went through. So she knew that, you know, she, you know, was going to look out for her as well. And because of that, you know, what I just went through. So she definitely didn't need to be rushing anything as well. So we just hung out and we had good time and good conversations, and, you know, and God was in the conversations a lot. And, you know, and then, you know, one conversation, she pretty much told me, like, I know I'm going to marry you. And I'm like, what? And, you know, she told me, she's like, yeah, she's like, you know, she pretty much written me on her eulogy and everything. And so, yeah, we kept hanging out, and, you know, we decided, you know, I was at this point where, like, you know, I honestly wasn't, I was okay. Like, I'd healed, like, from what had happened. Like, it was, for me, just, like, you know, clarity that, like, you know, God had other plans for me. And you know, and it just wasn't with that person. And it was with Whitney. And so we just kind of immediately knew and decided, you know, that, hey, you know, we're just ready to do this, you know, like, you know. She knew that she, you know, was in love with me and wanted to marry me and spend her life with me. And I knew the same with her. So, so that's what we did. And we just got married, you know, this March. And, you know, it's the best feeling when you finally get to meet someone who you know, you've been praying for, the type of person specifically, you know, that you're praying for and that you want to spend the rest of your life with, and you finally get to do that, you know, with that person, like, it's, you know, it's just not a better feeling. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yes, totally.
I know I sped through some of that, but, you know, that's pretty much.
I've got so many questions just from all the amazing stuff, that whole journey.
Yeah,
for sure. I'm glad you gave everyone a really real life perspective of each of the pieces, because, and it was good for me too, because I hadn't heard all the in-between details like that. So some of the questions I have do line up perfectly. Like, so back when, you know, I'm assuming that during the process of doing the different drugs that you were trying and stuff, that you'd maybe tried quitting at different times, like you'd mentioned, tried to, you know, go a different path, but then reverted back. What finally, I mean, obviously for you, you had the big court thing as like the final thing, but, you know, what really made the biggest difference, like for the final turn back? Because, I mean, obviously we hope for people that they don't have to go to quite the limit that you did, but even still, some people do. It's like, there's a turn, like, what was it that truly, cause you, I mean, I would venture to say the second time actually wasn't as bad as the first time, right?
Right.
When you actually died the first time, you know?
Right.
So what actually was the mental switch to finally make this time different? Because so many people, I think, try to stop these kinds of things, mm-hmm. and it's always this cycle, and they know they're going to go back, and it becomes this back and forth of, like, you know, they'll throw the things away and then they just go buy them again. And it's just, how can they break it? And how did it look for you?
So that's a great question. And, you know, for me, very fortunate, like I said, that I, you know, I had, you know, a good support system, you know, my family, my mother, you know, and grandmother always praying for me. And, you know, through all the trouble I got in from my younger years all the way up, you know, I'd always had those conversations. You know, I was disciplined. I mean, I was, you know, definitely disciplined. I mean, but my mom would always have conversations with me and my grandma as well, just telling me, like, that I'm better than what I'm doing. And that so many people care about me, you know, and that, you know, I'm hurting, you know, them as well. And obviously, like, if I die, you know, that's hurting them. If I go to prison, you know, that's going to hurt them and whatnot. And so for me, the biggest thing really was looking through, you know, the glass, you know, when I was locked up in Florida, you know, looking through the glass at my mom and my dad, and just, I felt like this, the biggest failure and letdown ever, because, like I said, they raised me right. You know, great parents, like, you know, I couldn't have asked for better parents, you know, but seeing my mother and my father, but my mother just, I mean, she was just devastated. And, you know, I mean, it did not look good at all. You know, it was pretty much, you know, guaranteed, like, this was, you know, this was going to happen. And so I just told myself and God that if, you know, if he gave me this other chance, that I would turn my life around, and, you know, that I would submit it to him and give it to him. Because my mom, she couldn't have made it if that had happened to me, if I had died or went to prison. And my dad, you know, he'd already said, you know, that he's, and he was dead serious too. I mean, he said that if, you know, if I went to prison, then he was going to do something to get himself in prison too, just so he could look after me. Like, you know, so I had the support, and they was always been there. And like I said, I've always had that prayer, you know, going on, you know, through, you know, my family and through the church as well and whatnot. So, but also, like, it has to, like, I had to want to be better too. And
right.
For me, like, you know, I've always had, like, a big heart, and I've always, you know, wanted to make, you know, people proud, you know, whoever, and, you know, obviously my parents as well. And that stems from, you know, playing sports and whatnot, but I wanted to be a better person because I knew I was better than what I was doing and all the stuff I did. And so, you know, that was pretty much where, you know, after seeing my mom through that window and being able to get that second chance, like, I was just so grateful to have that it wasn't even not a thought in my mind. Like, it was easy to just give everything up and start, you know, walking the straight path and living right. And not living for myself, you know. So
right.
I'm not perfect, you know. I mean, I still stumbled, you know. I still stumbled, and I still do. But, you know, I know where to go, and you know, for me, it's just my faith. My faith is very strong, and you know, I believe and I speak things, you know, into existence, and I just pray about it, you know, and whatever it is, I mean, I always trust that it's going to be God's plan. So I take myself out of it to where I don't worry about it, because at the end of the day, you know, I can't control it. What's going to happen is going to happen. Life is going to be, you know, life's going to happen regardless. So it's just, you know, your mindset on how you decide to deal with things while you're going through them, or what's the outcome's going to be.
Mm-hmm. And can you give us a comparison of what the voice inside your head sounded like in that phase of your life versus now? Like, what was the things, how did you talk to yourself? What did you think of yourself? What was your, you know, your self-worth, your self-talk, like, you know, the thoughts that ruminated in your mind at that phase of your life versus now?
Oh, I mean, I just thought I was just a piece of crap, you know, thug, just, you know, just a bad person, like that I wasn't worthy of anything. And, you know, I just felt like a total letdown, pretty much. Mm-hmm. But, you know, now, I mean, I feel like I have purpose. I know my purpose, and it's helping people, you know, and that's why, you know, that's why I do what I do. That's why I, you know, train people for a living, because I like to help people. And, you know, now it's, I have to get out here and speak and share the story more to where I can help, you know, these younger kids, at least give them perspective, you know, and you know, let them know that they always have a choice, you know, no matter what, no matter how bad things have been, what they've been through, what they've done, what they're going through. Like, you can always turn it around, but you have to be the one to do it. Nobody else can do it for you. Everybody can pray for you, you know, all the things that I had, but I ultimately, like, I had to make that choice to, you know, want to be a better person and want to be a better, you know, father, want to be a better coach, a better son, a better brother, like everything. I just wanted to be a good person. And I feel like I am today, starting to walk, you know, in my full strength of, you know, who I really am and what I'm supposed to be doing, you know, and I just, like, this is all just new to me. Like, you know, I love what I do, but I there was multiple times where, like, I just didn't really know, like, okay, well, I don't want to train people for the rest of my life. I love helping people, but, like, that's not ultimately what I want to do. I'm not going to compete as a bodybuilder the rest of my life. And then getting to, you know, speak and share my story for the first time, you know, completely, you know, on the island a little over a week ago, and coach, you know, the people that came to the Strength Summit there, that's where I really got the clarity that, like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. I need mm-hmm. to be sharing it and speaking to kids and talking to kids. And if I just say one, you know, then that's all worth it.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so going back to kind of what you said, I know Whitney had kind of sent me a mantra that you know, kind of live by, which is like, no matter what you've been through, no matter what you've done or who you were, you can always change. How can people when they're in the thick of it, in the place like you were, because you've heard that plenty, you know, I, you know people, like, they hear that, they hear the things from your parents, like, letting them know how much they're worth, but until you believe it, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter. So how can they believe that in themselves? How can they find that?
Visualize the type of person that you want to be, man or woman, the type of person you want to be, the type of friend you want to be, the type of husband, the type of wife, whatever the case is. For me, I always just would visualize the type of person that I wanted to be. And I would just speak that and pray for that, you know, and thank God in advance for, you know, renewing my heart and, you know, and giving me a second chance. And, you know, I would speak, you know, that I am a better father. I am a better, you know, boyfriend, you know, a better man. I am this, I am that, like, everything. Like, there was no negative coming out of my mouth, no matter what. Like, I was speaking it. And it is hard. Like, it's not easy to do when you're in the middle of going through that stuff. But that's got, like I said a minute ago, how you deal with the things that you're going through at that time in that moment is going to determine the outcome when you get through it. If you have a positive attitude, no matter what, when you're going through that, then something good is going to come out on the other end. But if you have this attitude of just laying down and giving up, it's not going to go in your favor. And so for me, it was just like, I was taught, you know, when I was taught how to pray, it was, you know, you give thanks first for everything he's done for you. And then you, you know, ask him for what you need. And so I would always thank him in advance for giving me a second chance, for sparing my life, for, you know, everything. And then I would speak, you know, ask him for things that I wanted, you know, to be successful, you know, to, you know, be healthy, to, you know, become a pro, you know, to be a good husband when that, you know, when that wife came around. I would just speak and ask for these things. And I, you know, I even wrote them out on a whiteboard, you know, and I would just speak them every day. And I would tell people about it. And, you know, and people would, you know, look at me crazy and whatnot. But I mean, just like, I finally got to that point where I was comfortable with my faith and talking about God. And, you know, he's the only reason I'm where I'm at today. Like, I didn't do any of it. None of this is me. It's all him. So, mm-hmm. You know, people need to know that. And whether you believe or not, you know, that's fine. It's up to you. But I mean, you know, find out for yourself, you know, just try it. But mm-hmm. I've always been big on just speaking things into existence and praying and asking him for, you know, what I want. Cause you know, you have not, cause you ask not.
Right. Right. And what does your like spiritual practice look like? How did you grow it? Because obviously, you know, you'd heard it before, but then weren't doing anything with it for a while. Like, so then when you were kind of getting, you got out, you had your next chance, what did you start doing as your new routine to get back in relationship, to try to then be able to have clarity on the next decision you needed to make to be that person you wanted to be? Because we can ask God for the things, but you also got to then like do it the way he says to do it. For it to come to life as well, you know, show up for what he's going to give you. So what does that look like for you?
So like stems back to my grandma and mom, a vision board, you know, have a vision board where you write everything down. You know, you write out everything, no matter how big it is, you write it down and you read it out loud every day and you speak over it and you pray over it. And that's what I did. I mean, and obviously, you know, like I used the Bible app a lot, and just would, you know, try to just stay focused on like putting positive in. Mm-hmm. I love rap and hip hop music, but that was something I had to kind of just get rid of because I can't keep putting that stuff in my head if I'm trying to do something else. Right. And so I would start listening to Christian rap, instead of, you know, the rap, you know, that I was actually used to liking, you know, and everything. So I started listening to Christian rap. So that was one thing I started doing differently. And then, you know, finding the devotional, you know, for men. I would look up devotionals for men for strength, for anxiety, for depression, you know, all these things that I went through in order to be able to, you know how to deal with them, you know, for myself as well. And then just routine, you know, just routines and habits are the most important thing when it comes to, you know, trying to, I guess, shift, you know, your life into, you know, a different path. So you have to totally shift and change your routines and habits from what you're used to doing to getting uncomfortable with things for a little bit, you know, and it sucks. I mean, mm-hmm. But you grow when you're uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And if I can say one thing, like, I've been uncomfortable for, you know, a lot of my life because of choices I've always made. I mean, I've been in multiple wrecks where I should have died. Like, there's multiple other things that's happened to me that I've been through. You know, I've been divorced before. I've had to file bankruptcy in my 20s. Like, I went through a lot of the big things that people go through, you know, later on in life at an early age. Mm-hmm. So I just knew that, like, I was never a quitter. Because my dad, you know, taught me, you know, that, you know, you can't be a sore loser. You can't be a quitter. So I think that's probably where some of it stemmed from, was that, like, I was just determined, like, no matter what, I was never going to give up. And I started, you know, just giving it to God. And as soon as I did, I mean, you know, like I said, with my business, when I started my business, I literally left on a Wednesday and didn't miss a beat or a check. And I've only promoted my business one time, and that was when I started it. Every, you know, and I still dealt with it before, but like, I would be, my book would be full. And then all of a sudden, you know, might lose, you know, 3 or 4 clients, fall off, whatever, for whatever reason. Well, immediately in my head, I'm thinking, all right, I'm just losing all that money now that was coming in each month. But when I finally, you know, changed my mindset and didn't worry and knew that he would provide for me, if one dropped off, I would get 2 new clients. So it was just my mindset. Just it's very tough. It is not easy to do, but anybody can do it. You just have to tell yourself, like, I'm going to do this no matter what. And you just have to, it's a discipline of every day, like, you know, working hard at it and not giving up and just never giving up. As long as you never give up, you can't fail.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. You can't beat the person that won't quit. I love that. Yeah. So you mentioned real quick that you had definitely dealt with anxiety and depression and stuff, which I'm sure is kind of common for people that go through all the things that you've been through. Do you still struggle with that? And how did you get to a place where, especially, you know, to find healthier means of dealing with anxiety and depression or those kind of things?
Yeah. So, No, I don't, because my faith, like, I just mm-hmm. I put my trust in God. So, you know, if something, you know, is there for me to worry about, it might initially get my attention, but I'm going to shift my mindset to, you know, worrying is not going to do it, because I've worried so much over the years. I know what that's like, and I know how that feels, and I cannot stand to feel that way. Mm-hmm. So I just won't allow it to be that way. Like, I will pray over it, and, you know, it's basically like I just give it to Him and,
yeah,
you know, trust that whatever it is going on, you know, that He's going to get me through it. So, you know, I pray about it, and I just keep a positive mindset about it, and try not to be negative. And, you know, I always get through it, and there's always something good on the other side. Mm-hmm. Every single thing that I have went through and been through on the other side has always been good.
Mm-hmm. And I think you've totally lived out the expression of, like, you wanted to change those things. So you actually made, like you said, uncomfortable changes. So, like, you changed your whole friend group, and I'm sure that changed the amount of anxiety and depression you had, because now you're not with other people doing, you know, overwhelmed by the same things, and you started getting in healthier activities. You're doing the gym, you're doing things that actually lift your endorphins and doing things like that. And, you know, just all the different changes and enhanced your faith, spending time there. Like, so all these changes you actively made to put yourself in a better place to support better feelings, I think, is also so huge. You know, not just staying where you are and hoping for something else. Like, so you've always continued to drive forward to the new goal, the new you, and, you know, have done that, which I think is cool. I know it took you a little while to be ready to kind of share your story. Mm-hmm. And so I was curious why that was. And then how did you finally decide that it was time to start sharing that side of things?
I was always ashamed because I've always cared what people thought of me, to an extent of, like, that I wanted people to think of me as a good person, as a good hearted dude, like, do, you know, give the shirt off his back, whatever. But growing up, you know, all the trouble I'd gotten in and everything, I was pretty much like that talk of, you know, like, oh, he's never going to make it. You know, he's going to, you know, be in prison or whatever. Like, I knew that I was judged a lot. Let's just mm-hmm. say that. And I didn't want to, you know, I didn't want that. So, you know, that was definitely a part of, you know, the fuel for me as well, was to, you know, to prove not only myself, but everybody else, you know, that, like, hey, I am a good dude and I can change and turn my life around. And so that was kind of, you know, the fuel behind it, you know, too, to prove and show everybody, you know, that I could do that. And so that was part of my mindset as well. And I stayed focused on just trying to be a better person, and just, you know, treat people with respect and, you know, be kind to everybody and just, I guess, just really just try and just be me. And what was the other part?
I was just curious. Yeah. What, so why you were, you know, not ready to share it for a long time. And then what finally was the catalyst to be like, okay, I need to start sharing the story, because people need to hear the messy side. You know, the mess has become the message point.
Yeah. I'd have to give credit to my wife, Whitney, mm-hmm. and one of her best friends, Brittany, who is the owner of the Aerial BVI Island, where, you know, I got to coach at. Because, once I told Whitney and obviously told Brittany about it, you know, they you know, mentioning like you need to be sharing and getting this out there or whatever. But it was never something I really even thought about doing. Right. I never ever thought that I was, you know, going to be speaking or even doing this right here, this podcast or, you know, any of this at all. Like, that was not something that I wanted to do. Like, I don't like to go and talk in front of a bunch of people. I mean, even the bodybuilding thing, like, I don't like going on stage and being in front of all those people. Like, I was always, you know, nervous doing that. And up until like the last couple years, you know, and I've been competing for, you know, over 10, you know, 12 years. But yeah, like it was, you know, it was them. And I told it similar to this probably like 3 weeks ago with Terry, the owner of the Nashville Fit Magazine. Mm-hmm. He came to the gym and we did a little, some footage of me with a client and whatnot, and then got some of my story as well. So, he asked me to do that. I'm pretty sure that probably came from Whitney, you know, talking to him or whatnot, but, he had reached out and was like, "Hey, you know, I'd like to, you know, record and get your story, whatever, you know, would you be cool with that?" And I was like, "Man, I don't know. I don't really, you know, I was never one to really put my business out there either. Like, I always, that was something that I always, struggled with as well, was just not wanting people to know my business, or my past, especially my past. But, you know, as I got older and started, you know, to live the life that I wanted and that I've always dreamed and prayed of, you know, I didn't want people to just see the good. It was like, you know, oh, you know, he's living this life, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, no, like, it was not always that way. Like, it was, this is where it was before. And I had to, you know, change things in order to live this life that I'm living now. So when I decided to do that with him, that was the first time. And afterwards, he was like, "Dude," he's like, "you sure you've never done this before?" And I was like, "No." And he was like, "Well, you did great." And I was like, "Okay, cool." And so that kind of made it a little less nerve wracking for when I'm going to an island to speak, you know, in front of all these other people that I don't know about, and, you know, coaching them and tell them my full story. And so getting to go there and doing that, once I did that and told it, you know, from the beginning to the end, what I got back from everybody there, it was just the clarity that I needed of like, I, you know, it would be selfish of me to keep this in and not share it with the world and share it, you know, to save, you know, kids, to help other people. And honestly, like, it just felt really good, you know, to do that. Yeah. And because I used to always think like, you want attention when you're sharing your business. Right? Yeah. Me, like, it's, I don't want attention. I've got to that place where I feel like it's okay. Like, this isn't, you know, I'm not using this for attention. I'm using this to help people.
Right. So
it, you know, if somebody gets something out of it, then that's good, you know? So.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely such a message of hope to show again that, like, again, it's just, and it's so relatable to so many people going through those situations, even if they're lesser types. Just, you know, you didn't just quit the first time, you went back, and again, you know, it's like, again, you're never not going to be good enough, especially for God or for some awesome wife or husband in the future. Like, no matter what has happened in the past, it's who you decide to be today and make the decisions today. And just on a minute by minute basis, whatever it is, that's who you can be. It doesn't matter who it was in the past, and that all of that stuff in the past can, then you can decide to use it to make other great things in the future that maybe if you didn't have that story could never have been done. So I think it's really cool for people to see that living example in you. And I think people too, they have to know, like, they don't have to wait till they have it all together either. You know, you don't, like, the sooner, I think you can heal the sooner you start serving too. So if you make one, like, shift, like, at the point where maybe you've successfully changed your friend group, start sharing that with other people. You know, like, people can really change people's lives even in early stages of their own personal life change. They don't have to wait till they're this big success, like where you're at, they're the pro, they're married, they're speaking on islands. They don't even have to wait till that point. You can do it earlier in the journey. I know people just don't feel good enough yet, but just, everybody's got to know there's another you out there you know, yeah. speak to the younger you. And man, if you could save that younger you from some serious pain, or like give them some guidance, or to feel less alone or feel worth something, like, wouldn't that be worth sharing? So I'm glad that you're finally out sharing everything, because it's definitely so powerful. Well, tell everybody about the amazing work that you are doing today, you know, what you offer, what people should look out for, and things like that. And we'll make sure to tell people where to follow you as well.
Yeah. So I'm still, you know, currently training clients.
And you're in Nashville.
My book is full, unfortunately, mm-hmm. but you can always reach out, and you can, all my information is on my IG, which is IFBBPro_RJ Savage. You can just click the link in my bio, and has all the information and ways to contact me. But you know, here forward, I'm going to, you know, get out there more and start speaking more. So I'm actually going to start with the Mount Juliet High School, that I, I'm going to attempt to, hopefully. Right. I'm going to go there and talk to them and see if I can, you know, if I can speak there. And just, you know, I do actually have, some connections that can, you know, help me get out there more, that they, you know, they speak as well and whatnot. So yeah, I'm just going to, you know, I'm just giving it to him again. Like, this is, I'm just letting him, you know, use me for what he wants to do. And I feel like this is, you know, exactly where I should be. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I'm just thankful to be able to, you know, to be able to be here and share it, and mm-hmm. be able to, you know, save some kids from, you know, making the mistakes that I did.
Right. And so, yeah, so make sure, and I'll have it in my show notes as well, but make sure that you're following him, because then I'm sure as you have these different speaking events coming up, you're going to, of course, be sharing them in your stories. So they can then click those links at that time and go to that event or go to that thing if they want to hear, you know, or see you in person. So make sure you're following him there, and I'll have that easy to click. And of course, when I share this in my stories, I'll have it as well. And so my last question that I love to ask everybody is, what does living an abundant life mean to you? And if someone were to ask you how they could start to build an abundant life for themselves, what would you tell them?
I would tell them to take a step back and assess where they are. Everything, right? Their friends that they're hanging out with, just assess everything going on and see if it lines up with what their ultimate goal is in life that they want to do, the type of person that they want to become, who they want to be, you know, what their goals are. And if they don't align, then to start making changes, right? Because you are who you hang around. I definitely can tell you that. So start making changes. And the biggest thing for me, honestly, was, you know, get a whiteboard and write everything out. Write everything down, you know, that you want in life, that you, you know, everything. Like, there's nothing too big or too small. Like, be scared, but write it down. And just constantly tell yourself and speak over that every day, whether you pray or you don't. I am a professional bodybuilder, or, you know, I am this, I am that, I will be this, I will be that, you know, and just tell people about it, but start doing things that you need to do and taking little steps, and just give yourself love and praise every day for the little things. Mm-hmm. Don't rush it. Don't, you know, it's going to come. Don't live in the past. And I've been using this lately a lot from Jeremy. I got this on the island, but don't live in the past. The past is just a place of reference. Okay. Mm. Don't live in the future, because you're going to give yourself anxiety because you don't know what the unknown is. But just try and be present and just live in that day at that time, and just focus on what it is that you need to do and those steps you need to take in order to get to where you want to be. And then just start doing it, and don't let anybody tell you that you can't do it, no matter what. If the people are speaking negative around you, you need to get away from those people. Only speak positive. And the biggest thing too, for me, was like, don't allow yourself to speak any negative, period, over yourself or anybody or anything. Like, catch yourself and change it. Change the way you talk, change the way you talk to yourself.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope that you love this episode and that it was able to help you move in the right direction towards building the life that you want. If you take just a quick moment to leave us a positive 5-star review, I'd be so, so grateful, and share with any friends that you think would love it. This not only helps spread the mission of this podcast, but it helps to open the door to even more amazing guests and opportunities to better support you in amplifying your success and overflowing your cup with abundance. Thanks again, guys, and catch you on the next one.